This is an interview that I did back when I was in Chicago with Mary Cousins, and I'm just doing this quick intro to apologize to her because my settings on my computer were messed up because I'm an idiot, and we actually recorded this with the wrong microphone. So it kind of sounds like it was recorded on a potato, and Mary just deserves better than that. So sorry, Mary. Anyway, she's great, and I hope you get something out of this. Welcome to the Board Game Workshop podcast. I am Phil Amelon, your guest contributor, and I am continuing my bike ride across the country. And as I do that, I keep finding these amazing people that I like to call design allies. These are people that are maybe not currently designing games, but are still nevertheless very important parts of our community. And I'm sitting here with Mary Cousins. And as far as I can tell, she is the social nexus of the toy and game industry. She may disagree with that, but we'll see. Welcome, Mary.
Thanks, Phil. That was a very generous intro. Thank you very much. Well, I love this community. I love our industry so much. I was in like 5, 6, 7 different industries prior to the board game and toy industry. And it wasn't until I got here I knew I'd found my tribe. Right. So I'm just so happy to be here and I'm happy to play a role in this industry.
So. Cool. So let's talk just a little bit about your role. We'll dive into all the different things that you do, but as sort of a top level thing, what do you do in the like Chicago toy and game universe?
Well, we actually changed our, you know, we used to be Chicago Toy and Game Group, and we've evolved to People Play because Chicago made us seem like we were just Chicago. But truth is like our events draw from 25 countries. They come to Chicago. We host pub events all over the world. We have visitors to our website of over 190 countries. I think it's 190 countries or something like that. So we change the People Play, which is much more universal. But my role is evolved over time as well. And that is I started as an inventor. And this was during the time I actually worked in real estate. And it was real estate, you know, it was a job. It wasn't like a passion, right? And I needed a creative outlet. And like I used to sculpt cakes and things like that. Like I just want to do creative things. And I had a friend who worked at then Western Publishing before Hasbro bought them. And he used to bring down prototypes and games to play. And he would tell the stories of the inventors, like the Pictionary guys or and like the girl talk. And anyway, the stories were fascinating, right? Like really fascinating stories. And I just fell in love with these stories. And then I started to think, hey, you know, I've got an MBA. I'm smart. I can design a game. How hard can that be? It's like, duh. Like it's so hard to design a game. There's magic in a game, right? Like it's MBAs don't do anything for a game. It's like, so I had a lot of false starts. I, you know, invented a lot of different things that did not work. And then I finally hit one, Hollywood's Real Spiel, that actually had some legs, and we both self-produced and licensed that, which was fun. But then I started helping other inventors, and I loved that. I really did. And we started something called Discover Games. And I would take out a booth at different shows and welcome other inventors for like a reduced fee. Like we started for $100, like to have a presence, which is pretty cheap. I actually didn't cover my costs, but like Rio Grande was even one of our first few years. He was part of it, Jay was. And so I went around different shows and showing all the new inventors' games. You know, we didn't have Kickstarter back then, and we didn't have all these things. This was the late 90s. And in early 2000s. But then I went to Essen and I was lucky enough to have Alan Moon show me around. So I had a different sort of feel for Essen than a lot of other people might, right? And I got to meet a lot of people. But I loved the way that the designers were treated like celebrities, right? And I also loved that families were playing games. Like, they were in the aisles playing games. Like, the chairs were filled. And it was so exciting to see this. And because we didn't have, at that time, we didn't have anything like that back in the States. I mean, we had the hobby shows, but you didn't see families, like, going to shows that play games. And so I thought, well, I've got to do this. How hard can that be, right? And so came back and rented Navy Pier. Big expense. But I thought, I can do this, right? And boy, that was a lot harder. Again, just like I went into it not knowing how hard it was. And we've evolved it over the years. And now, of course, we've added a lot of other events too. But it's sort of my passion, like turning people on to games. And what's really awesome is that people will come to our show and they will find things they don't see at Targets and Walmarts. And they're like, where does this come from? And so we're sort of a gateway to new types of products for people to check out. And also a lot of people do a lot of play testing at our shows. And we have to have toys here because in the U.S. families want toys as well as games. So we're half toys and half games. And we really, we want to promote play. That's our big thing, right? We want to promote play and bring our industry together as a community. So we also started the Young Inventor Challenge, which was inspired by my daughter, who when she was in fourth grade invented a game. And so that's become very successful. We even have one kid who, eight years ago, I think now, he won the Young Inventor Challenge. He works at Spin Master now. And so, and we've had over maybe about a dozen kids get their products into Target and other retail outlets around the world. So
when you say kids, like what age range are we talking?
6 to 18.
Wow. Okay.
I know, right? One of the best quotes ever. So there's these two girls that invented Betcha Can't that's in Target. They're 13. They were 11 when they invented it.
Wow.
And so we have this video of them. We asked them to create a video to give advice to other young inventors. And so they get on there and they said, well, we've been inventors all our lives. It wasn't until we were 11 that we started inventing games. And I was just like, and then their first time out, they get into, you know, an exclusive in Target. Now they're in other places too, but Goliath just fell in love with them and licensed the game right away. But it was so cute. And they were serious. Like, they weren't just, they believe they're inventors and they're inventing other games now too. So
wow.
I know. And then we've had other events. We started the Taggy Awards much because of like the way inventors were treated overseas. So we thought if we told the story of these inventors, like get their names out there, it'll sell more product. And like Leslie Scott, the inventor of Jenga, totally believes that once her story started getting out there, that it sold more Jengas. And the more we got her out there, other news outlets wanted to interview her, and she's been on a lot more shows, and she firmly believes it sold more Jengas. And we love telling the story. And over time, we started to understand that, well, we shouldn't just be inventor-centric. There's innovation in all parts of our industry, right? Like, I had a lunch with a local rep here, actually, and we worked with all the same companies, but we didn't know the same people, which was really fascinating. And really to make the industry more successful, you should know what everybody else does, right? Like, you should know how your role affects other parts of the company or supply chain or whatever. It just, like, when you're designing a game, you should know what makes it easier for a printer to print it or how to save costs and what makes it easier for a PR company to promote it or the graphics company to do the graphics. And so we've evolved the awards as well to the Toy and Game International Excellence Awards. So now we also award innovation in retail and in graphics and in PR. And so we've expanded those as well.
So that interconnectedness
exactly.
Is actually like a big thing that I noticed. So I had the pleasure of coming to one of your social events a couple nights ago, and I was really surprised at the variety of people that I met. Can you talk a little bit about your approach to those events and like how you get those people together and what like your mission is behind that?
Well, the mission is to bring people together that understand what each of our roles are in the industry. And in when I first started doing these years and years ago in Chicago, it was interesting to me that we have so many, at that time, well, still, we had a lot of inventors here that didn't know one another. And we definitely had a lot of companies that didn't know one another. And as we hosted these, people got to know each other better and better and better. And we've become really tight in this industry. And in Chicago, in fact, there was a time people would say, oh, that Chicago mafia group over there. Like, they would make fun of us. Wow. Because we were kind of a tight group, right? But also, since Chicago has an interesting history, because Marvin Glass is actually the one who invented the idea of inventing games to license to toy and game companies. And he started that back in the 50s, early 50s, I think, with Eddie Goldfarb, who went on to then invent Kerplunk and Shark Attack and Chattering Teeth and Fake Vomit. And Eddie, who's 99 and still inventing.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Marvin Glass died early, but Marvin had like 8 wives, and he smoked and he drank, and he was like, he was like this really, and his best friend was Hugh Hefner. They lived next door to one another, and he was selling toys and games, right?
Wow.
He had, they say, rumor that he would have naked women show toys and games to the product acquisition executives. He would arrive, he was all about PR, and he would arrive in an armored truck with his attaché handcuffed to his briefcase to show ideas at New York Toy Fair. Like, he was really, like, living large, and he was, yeah, he was interesting. So when he died in 1974, they tried to go on with, he had 74 inventors working for him. Imagine that. And no windows, because he was paranoid. There were no windows. But when he died, they split out all the different people. So we have, now we have BMT, which used to be Breslow, Morrison, and Terzian, and now it's Big Monster Toy, Ray Kemper, Lund. I mean, we have a lot of different companies all over and groups all over Chicago now that invent. So we're like on the stop. Hasbro, Mattel, they all stop here quarterly to meet with inventors. They call them sweeps.
So when you say quarterly, what are they coming to social events that you've organized?
Oh, yeah, often. Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Sometimes I organize them around their coming in often and make them the, you know, guest of honor, if you like, you were on Sunday. You were our guest of honor.
That was very cool. Yes, thank you.
You know, you were our headliner. yeah, that makes it fun because then it tells people that we have somebody new coming, and it just makes it more exciting, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Actually, that makes a lot of sense. That's mm-hmm. a way to get people together. Say, hey, this person from out of town is coming. You should meet them.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, that's a cool way to attract people. What I did for all of that night was very cool and interesting. And already the people I met, I would love to come back and see again. Do you experience that a lot? Do people from out of town come in and then they're like so enthralled with the scene that they want to come back? Because that's how I experienced
really?
It. Yes.
Oh, I love that. Well, we host them all over the world. So for instance, like our London Distoy event, I think brings 250 people, something like that. And the one we do during New York Toy Fair, which is, gosh, wow, in its 20th year, maybe, something like that, brings over 500 people throughout the night from like 6 p.m. to 3 a.m. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
People will come before they go out to dinner, then come back after. Like, it's just like all parts of the industry. When we started 20 years ago, it was all inventors. And then over time, as we evolved, it brought in the PR people and the suppliers. And we host them in Barcelona and Tel Aviv. The one in Tel Aviv, Israel's crazy. So it's funny. They're so close over there that when I first put out the call out for that we were going to get together at this place called the Beer Bazaar, within 24 hours, we had like 90 people signed up. I've never had that happen. Wow. It was wild, and it was one of the best ones we ever had. Like, people were just so friendly, and of course, people always wonder, why are you coming to our country to put together an event? Like, it does seem kind of mm-hmm. weird, but now that I know so many people, I guess they don't consider it as weird anymore. Now we do them virtually, the first Thursday of every month in our pop pub on our website, and everyone's welcome just to come and join us from 5 to 7. Right, 5 to 7 Central Time. You'd be surprised who's on there. We have like the product acquisition execs from Hasbro, Mattel, and Spin Master on the call. And what's so cool is that they talk to all the new inventors on the call, like on the call. So what do you do? And what have you invented? And it's just so friendly. It's a community. It's just such a community. I love it.
I mean, that's, I think, the best part about this is that everyone is so friendly and open and sharing and caring and all the great things.
Yes.
So I'm not sure I fully understand this yet. And for people listening, if you could break this down, when you say you have events in Tel Aviv and in
Barcelona, I forget.
Yeah,
London,
that was what I was trying. So
LA.
All these places, is that because are you going there because there are toy and game conventions that are already happening, and so you go there and organize events around that, or how does that work exactly?
Sometimes, yes. So like London's is organized around Distoy, which is a distributor toy show, but Tel Aviv, I went there just because I have so many friends there, like the Costers who invented Guess Who and Elephant.
Oh, wow.
And the new Poppet one with Fox Mind. And so they're very close friends. They actually sit right where you sit when they come to Chicago. Yeah. And so there, I didn't have another event. I just went there to spend a week in Israel, never been before. And I was a guest of theirs, and we hosted this event, and all these people came. It was fantastic. Barcelona, I just tagged on to Distoy. So I went from London to Barcelona. There was no other event going on. I was just there for 2 days. And what was so fascinating about Barcelona was they'd never had an event before, right? Like they don't have events. So I was introducing the companies to one another. So that was fascinating to me that I knew more companies than they knew each other. That was really strange, but cool. And they all come to our event, right? All these companies come to find new products at our November events. And so they often meet each other there too. And I go there to get more of them to come, to get new companies that don't typically leave Europe. Mm-hmm. or South America or wherever to come to our event to meet new inventors.
So when you organize these, how do you kind of put the all call out? Like, how can someone who is a inventor in Barcelona know that your event exists?
Good question. So I was quite the stalker in my early years. I was really like out there really trying to collect email, you know, like really building my lists. But now I'm at the point where I've got 30,000 LinkedIn contacts, and I have a group on LinkedIn, the Toy Game and Play Innovator group, that has over 5,000. Then Facebook, or like in our events, people come. Now I think we have a reach of at least 250,000. So like, for instance, I have at least 2,000 contacts in the UK. And when I did Barcelona, I think I had several hundred. And I always do try to get partners. So I try to get sponsors to help. Like for the London event, we'll have 13 sponsors. So it's free food and drink for everybody at that, right? And at the one in Barcelona, I got another company there to help me find a place and get that all organized. So like they'll pick up the drinks or something like that. So we always try to get a partner that helps, and then they help get the word out too.
So this is why I described you as the social network, or the social nexus, because you have this global reach. But part of my journey is visiting local areas. So I want to talk a little bit about Chicago.
Okay.
Specifically about this convention that you run that is 4 days long and happens in November in normal times. I guess that's sort of up in the air this year. You're not quite sure about that, but
well, we'll have something, whether it's virtual, hybrid, in person. We're still working a bit on that. We know that. So I'll define all the events. So we have the conference goes for 2 days for new inventors and PR people, marketing people, like other professional inventors can continue meeting for 4 days. So for professional inventors, it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Everybody else, it's Thursday and Friday because those people want to exhibit in general.
What is it called? What's the...
Oh, sorry. So that's the... where we've just sort of changed evolving the name to Pop Innovation Week. And
it used to be called...
used to be called Chicago Toy and Game Week.
Okay.
And we had the Inventor Innovation Conference, Inventor and Innovation Conferences. And then we had the Taggies. The Taggies are still the Taggies, although it's during Pop Week. And the Taggies will be virtual this year. So we hired TV producers like we did last year, and we're producing it like a TV show. And
that's cool.
It is really cool. Like, we have skits and blue screen, like green screen, not blue screen, sorry. Like, we were meeting with the script writers last night and the TV people to really, and music, like, it's all there. We really want to film it like a show. And then we also started Pop's Got Talent. So they're interesting. There's so many interesting people in our industry, right? Uh-huh. Like, crazy interesting people. So there's a lot of magicians in our industry. Like Mark Sedicati, who's a well-known game inventor, is also a well-known magician. So like when we had a theme of magic at the Taggies, I went to the local magic shop to order 50 magic hats, 50 bunnies, 50 like wands, bunch of sky. Anyway, and they're like, what do you need this for? I said, oh, well, Mark Sedicati. All these old magicians were sitting there. They all stopped talking. They're like, you know Mark Sedicati? And I'm like, yeah, he's a good, really good friend of mine. And they're like, oh my God, his magic. And then one time I remember picking up Mark, and he just spent all night with David Copperfield testing out his newest tricks.
Wow.
So the magicians check, like they test tricks out on one another mm-hmm. for holes, right?
Yeah.
And I love that, right? Like, isn't that, that's just awesome.
Well, it's so what we do. We yes, are yeah. testing our games for that's holes. True. They yeah. test tricks for holes.
They do.
I think there are similarities for sure.
Absolutely. And Jim McCafferty performed in Vegas for, I think, 20 years, 10 years maybe before he became an inventor. He invents more toys than games, but some games too. In fact, one of my favorite games, Catch the Fox. Do you know it? Like the pants disappear inside the fox.
No.
There's chickens and you have to look it up. It's, I can't, you know, you can, I can watch that a million times and you just don't see the pants disappearing. It's magic. Huh. It really is magic. You put magic in that game.
That's cool.
Really awesome. It's a simple game. It's like a skill and action game, but I just love trying to catch the pants disappearing and you just can't do it. And then we have sing, you know, people that sing and play, like there's just so many different talents. It's crazy. So we had Pop's Got Talent, and that was organized by the Fuhrer brothers, Bob and David, both inventors. Like Bob did Crocodile Dentist and a million other things. David Fuhrer did Vortex Football. He's got those, the bracelets out with Spin Master now. He's done a million. So one brother's on the East Coast, one brother's on the West Coast. So it was kind of fun to have them like in a dual screen.
And this happens on one of the days of your convention?
This we do this now after the Taggy Awards.
Okay.
Sort of like the encore to the Taggy Awards. But David Fuhrer is the world's fastest backwards talker. He's in the Guinness Book of World Records. And he's been on Leno. He's been on like all those late night shows. So that's what I'm saying about we have like the coolest people that do some of the coolest stuff in our industry.
Well, that's the second Guinness World Record that I've encountered just in this group because I met, what's her name? Marla?
Marla.
Yeah, so Marla has the world record for the most wind up toys. And I met her at your event.
That's right.
So
yeah.
You bring a lot of Guinness holders together.
Did you see her YouTube channel?
I subscribed. I haven't got a chance to watch any yet.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. It's pretty crazy. But this industry, the people are just so much fun. And so we had to capture and showcase their skills. And that's why we started Pop's Got Talent. So that follows the Taggy Awards. And then on Saturday and Sunday, we have our fair, our consumer fair. And that for us, that's promoting play. We host the Young Inventor Challenge during it. People do play testing. It's just a lot, very immersive, just loads of fun. And Saturday night of our fair is the Disney Parade on Michigan Avenue. So we draw from around the country because they come in for the big Disney Parade and our fair. And so it's just fun. It's a lot of fun.
It sounds like a ton of fun. So it sounds to me like, if you're an industry person, you would want to go all 4 days because mm-hmm. you want to take part in all the cool workshop stuff and the award stuff that's happening on those first 2 days. And then the second 2 days are more like maybe what you would consider like a regular show where there's people like selling games and you can walk the convention hall and you can play test and do all that sort of fun stuff.
Exactly.
Something that you mentioned the other day that I thought was interesting about it is that you specifically gear this towards families, right? And so how do you feel like that differentiates, I'm sorry, what is it called again? People of Play Weekend?
It's part of People Play Week.
Yeah, so how does that differentiate from other conventions like an Origins or Gen Con or PAX, stuff like that?
Oh, sure. So it will always be called the Chicago Toy and Game Fair because it's harder to reach families. And for us to change the name, it's just harder. When you're fan-based show or a trade show, people will follow you no matter what. And if you change your name, they're going to figure it out, right? But for consumers, you have to kind of keep the same name, keep the same time.
Okay.
Families have a million different things they can do on a weekend, right? Kids age out too, right? That happens. And so it's a lot harder to have a family-based show. And so that's why you don't see a lot of them, because it's harder to reach them. And so for us, like during the year, I've got to go to block parties or go to the opening of Buckingham Fountain or go to Pierogi Fest or go to, you know, we've got to go to all those shows. And like we bring giant Jengas and games to play. And I partner with some toy stores like Linda Cat and Mouse for different like shows, like, and we partner with toy stores where we give them coupons to give out to people in their bags, like, come, you know, $2 off coming to the show. And we don't charge much for the show because the psychology is, when I first started, I was going to make all free for everybody, like just to come in thinking that's how you drive people. And they said, no, you never make an event free because then people don't value it. And they, if they don't buy a ticket, they won't come. They'll something else may come up.
That's totally true.
I didn't know that. You know, that was interesting to me. Like they have to have skin in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very inexpensive to attend. You have to make it, there's some sweet spot, right? So I think it's since it's been 2 years now, I think it's, $12 for an adult, and we have the $2 coupon, so it makes it 10. And then it's $5 for a kid, and the $2 coupon makes it 3. Or sometimes we have the 50% off. So we try to make it show value, but make it inexpensive for a family to come.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. And teachers get in for free. Scouts get in for free. Who else gets in for free? Teachers, scouts. I'm forgetting some groups, I'm sure, but...
Well, this reminds me, I feel like I heard you or overheard you talking about this the other day. Do you run specific events for educators?
Oh, yes, we do. So we have at the fair, actually, we have a conference for educators where they get continuing education credits.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah. They get 5 credits. You were a teacher.
I was. Yeah, we had to do that.
Exactly. But we try to make it fun for you.
Yeah.
And you walk away with, the last time we had this when we were in person, they walked away with $100 worth of games from Educational Insights and Learning Resources, like a whole bag of games. So we make it fun. We have fun speakers and fun. I think it's got to be your most fun way to get continuing education credits.
I would think so. I'm thinking of the other ways I've done that, and they were pretty boring. So.
Exactly. Well, we really work hard at trying to get toys and games into schools. We have a Play and Education website and newsletter that goes out, and because there's all kinds, as you know, there's all kinds of studies that show bringing play in helps learning.
Yes, absolutely. So that all sounds like ways that you make this family oriented then, because not only are you actively seeking families as you go around during the year, but also I think bringing educators in is another big part of that, because then, you know, get their kids interested and all that stuff.
Absolutely.
Very cool. More Chicago stuff. One of the reasons that I think I had so much fun the other night is that I feel like I've seen different aspects of this community. Like, I've interacted with the Boston people a lot. I've interacted with the Seattle people a lot. There's a group in Nashville that I've interacted with virtually. I've been to game design retreats, but I have never seen anything like the way Chicago approaches networking. And I'm wondering why that is. I'm wondering, is there something that you would share with the rest of the game design world about how how we should be approaching things, because we network sort of like informally as we play test each other's games. Like I know all these people, I become friends with these people because of that, but we don't specifically go out of our way really to hold any kind of special event that's really just for the purpose of getting together and having fun and like sharing food and stories, which is basically what we did the other night.
Right. Well, sometimes there's game playing. The last in-person event we were supposed to have was actually scheduled on April 1st of 2020. It was going to be at Cards Against Humanity, had a game cafe here in Chicago. They've since sold it. So there was going to be a lot of game playing at that. But I don't know. You know, it could be because we've been doing this for so many years now that people have just started to get to know each other, right? Like they become friends. It's gone beyond just play testing each other's, you know, games. I think maybe that must be what it is. We become.
So you think maybe it's just because you have a like more ingrained community that maybe has been around longer?
I think so.
Yeah.
It must be because we've been doing this a long time now.
That's fair. The people you brought up, the games you brought up, are a lot of those were games that I played as a child. So those are prolific designers that have existed for quite a while. That makes sense. So maybe it would be helpful advice to the world out there. This is just my own rambling at this point, to start having those social events. Like how do you feel? I don't know if you can remember the transition from just like getting together and tinkering to getting together just for fun. But like, how do you feel that has strengthened the Chicago toy and game industry?
Oh, it definitely has. Like when I need an informal group, like to test a new idea out for the, you know, for our events or a marketing campaign or I don't know, a blurb even, right? Like just something I can count on people to respond to me right away. And they'll give me their honest opinion. That is so important. We don't need people that just say, oh yeah, that sounds great. Which if you don't really know somebody well, you might do that, right? But if you start to know somebody and you trust one another, you're going to get an honest opinion, right? Like, and then also I know that they'll turn out for events, right? And actually the one you were at was probably our least attended event because of COVID. Like people were kind of afraid to come out, but it was still a good crowd, but it was less than what, I don't know. It's really sad how COVID has, you know, affected so many things, but, I know we really have become a group. It's like, I mean, close group. It's, I know I can just trust them to be honest. It's really, when you're building something, you need that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Outside of like a professional thing, how has having these sort of extra community events, like how does it enrich you personally?
Oh, well, some of my best friends now are in our industry, right? Like it's evolved to that where, instead of, because I talk to them more, right? Like, because I talk, so now my closest friends are in this industry. And I love it because they're creative, cool people, right? And I don't know, they challenge you and they make you think more and they tell you what they need. And so then I try to figure out, well, how can I meet that need, right? Like, we did have one semi-failed event that I was trying to promote. It was called Play Chic. I still love it. I'm still going to figure out a way to make that work. But like people were saying, you've got to make play sexy, if you will, right? Like you know what I mean? Like,
how did this work? Did everyone like dress up to the nines and come out to play games?
We actually hired real fashion models, like really professional fashion, like top Chicago models.
Okay.
We hired Project Runway designers. And then, like, Spin Master, Mayfair had some, for Settlers of Catan, had some of the best sexy looks you can imagine. Like, oh, they were really, Mayfair, at the time when they owned Settlers, they were one of our biggest sponsors. And he loved Play Chic. Every year, he had one or two models, looks I should call them. And one of our looks got into Italian Vogue. Another got into London Fashion Week. And another look got in the Moshi Monster look, which was really awesome, out of the UK, got into the cover of New York Times. Can you imagine that? But despite all that, it never made money for us, which is why we had to kind of let it go.
But so we how did this work? Like, I mean, I'm picturing like models walking down the runway showing off clothes. Yeah. But in this case, are they just like they're holding made, a game? Like, what are they doing?
So they're inspired. So in some cases, like, so you know Meccano, you know what Meccano is? Like the old erector sets.
Oh, okay.
And so with the long, shiny pieces. That
yeah.
So one model, their whole dress, and it was a little dress, I might add, had like these long pieces stuck. And so when she walked, you can imagine swinging pieces. Oh, man, I didn't know a woman could move in that many different ways. But the light caught it, and it was just gorgeous, like this whole dress. The Mayfair look is they took what they imagined characters from some of their games would look like.
Oh,
they were stunning. It is on our website under the taggies. We actually have a tab for Play Chic to see some of them. We had a Twister dress. So, like, the hat had the big, like, the big circles of colors, and then the dress had the circle of colors. That one actually got onto some TV shows. They brought that on. They thought it was fascinating. And, oh, I don't know. I'm going to figure it out, like how to make money with Play Chic and bring it back. Because that fashion promotes everything, right?
Like yeah.
So I'll make it work someday. It was pretty cool. A lot of people, it was mixed reviews. Some people didn't like it. They're like, nah, you're going a little off the wall here. But it was cool.
It sounds cool. I mean, it sounds like an excuse to dress up and go to a swanky event and have some board game theme around that, which is sweet. We've been talking a bit on with Chris Anderson and a few other people back on the East Coast. We've been talking about how games are art, and I think there's a ton of overlap there with the fashion world and all of that. So that sounds really fun and interesting.
That's exactly right. Games are art. They really are. And so is gameplay. There's an art, right? There's an elegance.
Yes.
The best ones, there's an elegance to the play.
That is the word we use very often.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, a game is elegant. I think it means different things to different people. But for me, an elegant game finds like a simple solution to what might be a clunky problem. And it takes that clunkiness away and it just makes it nice and smooth. Like to me, have you played Wingspan?
No.
I think Wingspan is very elegant.
I agree. I want to play it. Elizabeth Hargraves, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to play it. That's a beautiful game.
It is. And Mariposas? I don't know how to say that. The butterfly game. Mm-hmm. But it's also, I think that's another elegant game.
Yeah. Exactly.
And it's gorgeous.
It is gorgeous. Yeah. Totally gorgeous. Well, I remember, this is back in my first year, 2003. Do you know Glenn Drover?
No.
From Forbidden Games?
Kind of like Forbidden Desert, games. Forbidden... or is that more of a company?
Well, his company name is Forbidden Games.
Okay. I don't know who that is.
You can look him up, but here's the cool part.
All right.
So it was so cool is when I was first getting to know Glenn, he was telling me, I was like, oh, the artwork on this game is beautiful. He goes, well, I hired an artist, a real artist to paint it, Keith Rocco. He says, and I'm like, I know Keith Rocco. He married one of my best friends from high school. It was like, you never know about like connections, but he went out and he found the best Civil War artist he could to design that game. I mean, the artwork.
Yeah.
I was so impressed with that.
Art is so important.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Some people miss that, right?
I think now we recognize it as being more important. I remember, when Magic the Gathering first came out, you have this array of different kinds of art. And I personally still like it, probably for nostalgia reasons. But objectively, I think that the art in Magic today is probably technically better. Yeah. And so I think a lot of game designers recognize that art sells games in a lot of ways. I pick up boxes because the cover's pretty.
Oh, right.
Almost all the time. That's why. Or the graphic design, you know, all that stuff's important. All right. I'm smelling the pizza. So one last question. And maybe the answer to this is pizza. This isn't even really a game question, but I like to ask people as I go to these different cities, these places I've never been before, what do you like about where you live? Like, what do you like about Chicago? Maybe you like your favorite thing or your top three things, or like, why do you choose to continue to live here? Or any of those, like an answer to any of that
Well, what's cool about Chicago, people are so nice in the Midwest in general, you know. I mean, they're just really nice people. But Chicago itself has the lake. We have the river. And, you know, I was once actually interviewed by the mayor of Chicago, and that was a question of his. Which do you prefer, the lake or the river? Which do you prefer? Which piece is your favorite? Which Sox or Cubs? Like, there's a lot here, and just people are just so nice. And there's just such a vibrant inventor community here because of Marvin Glass. That made it fun, right? And of course, I have family here, but I don't know. I travel a lot, right? So I still get to see all the other places. And I just love Chicago. I can't, it really is a beautiful city. And we don't have the extreme heat they have on the West Coast, right? Mm-hmm. And the East Coast may be underwater at some point. And yeah. I think we're pretty safe here in the Midwest right now. I know it's a terrible way to look at it right now. I hope we get this climate change under control.
Oh, yeah, change a lot of minds.
Yeah.
When you say the lake, you mean Lake Michigan, which I know. It's funny. You guys just call it the lake. Where I'm from, if you call something the lake, we're probably talking about basically a pond.
Oh, that's funny. I know, it looks like an ocean, right?
It does. I was surprised. I was so shocked at how ocean-like it was. I got a chance to put my feet in it and walk on a sandy beach, and I was just like, I felt like I was back at home. It was crazy.
I know. You can't see the other side.
So yeah.
I know. It's really crazy, but and it's beautiful.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for doing this. If the Chicago toy, well, I know it's happening, but when is this happening? If people are looking for Chicago Toy and Game Fair, where do they go?
They can go to two places, either chitag.com, C-H-I-T-A-G, stands for Chicago Toy and Game.com.
Makes sense.
Or peopleofplay.com.
Cool.
Both of the websites will have something about it. Or subscribe to our newsletters or join one of our LinkedIn groups, or, you know, we work hard to get it all out there.
Cool.
So, or send me an email, you know,
that's how I got in touch with you.
Yeah. I'm friendly.
It's very true. 100% true. Stand by that.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much. This was fun.
No, this was fun.
Cool. Let's eat some pizza.
That's all for this episode. Financial support for Board Game Workshop is provided by our annual game design contest and our Patreon supporters. Special thanks to our inventor level supporters, Chris Turner, Brad Batchelor, Roscoe Shock, Bass Cottis, and Yaima Games. If you would like to support the show, go to patreon.com/theboardgameworkshop. You can contact the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Discord. Go to theboardgameworkshop.com for links, past episodes, and information about our design contest and other events. Thanks for listening.